Mahabharata, Chapter 47, Duryodhana's Obstinacy. In the hall, the assembled Kuru elders waited with anticipation. As they heard Krishna's chariot approach, the hall buzzed. And as Krishna dismounted from his chariot, shouts of "Hail to Govinda! All glories to Krishna, Lord of the Yadus!" rang out. Krishna caught hold of both Vidura's and Satyaki's hands on either side of him and walked into the hall. Dhritarashtra rose, along with Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and others. Crossing the floor, Krishna greeted Dhritarashtra respectfully. The king offered him a beautiful throne encrusted with jewels. With his divine vision, Krishna saw numerous celestial rishis approaching the assembly from the sky. He said, "Many rishis, hoping to witness what will happen here today, have assembled. See, there is Narad Muni. Offer them suitable seats, for how can any of us sit down while they remain standing?" Dhritarashtra ordered his servants to fetch golden seats. The rishis entered the hall like glowing planets descended from the heavens and accepted the seats. After they had been worshipped with all respect, Krishna accepted his own seat and was in turn worshipped by the Kurus. Vidura sat next to Krishna on a seat covered with white deerskin and decked with gems. Opposite Krishna, Duryodhana and Karna sat together on a single throne. As the monarchs took their places, Brahmins recited Vedic hymns to invoke an auspicious atmosphere. Gradually, everyone fell silent and gazed at Krishna. Seated on his throne, he looked like a dark gem set in gold. There was perfect stillness in the hall as everyone waited for him to speak. Krishna looked toward Dhritarashtra and said, "May there be peace between the Kurus and the Pandavas, O Bharata. May no heroes be slain on either side. Only for this have I come. O King, I have nothing more to say." Hearing Krishna speak reminded the assembly of the soft thunder of autumnal rain clouds. All eyes remained fixed upon him. "O King, you know as well as I do the cause for the present situation. Peace lies in your hands. You have a great responsibility. Your dynasty is famed for its virtue and nobility. The Kurus are especially known for their knowledge of scripture, good behavior, kindness, compassion, forgiveness, and truthfulness. Do not allow your fine heritage to be sullied. You are the Kuru's leader and must bear the reaction to any sinful acts that they perform. A calamity now faces your race, caused by the Kuru's behavior. If you do not check it, O monarch, it will destroy the world." Krishna looked over at Duryodhana. The prince appeared distracted, looking away from Krishna and rubbing his face with a hand covered in gleaming gems. Krishna went on, "O king, your sons are not considering mortality or even profit. They are wicked and overcome by avarice. They are being unfair toward their own friends. I do not think peace would be so difficult to achieve. It depends on you and me. You should give an order, and your sons should follow it. The Pandavas never ignore my advice. Set your sons on the path of peace, and I will do the same with the Pandavas. Consider everything carefully, O King. Even if you desire to rule this world, it is still better to establish peace with the Pandavas than to make them your enemies. At present, they see you as a worshipable elder. They will wait upon you and protect you, and even the gods will not be able to assail you. You will not find better allies than the Pandavas. With them at your side, you would lead troops headed by Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, Ashvatthama, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, and so many other great heroes. Where is that fool who would fight such warriors?" The blind king sat with his head bowed. Krishna's speech was as he had expected, cutting and painfully true. His throat was parched, and he called for water as Krishna continued, On the other hand, O king, what profit will there be in fighting with the Pandavas? What merit do you see in arranging for so many men to die? O best of the Bharatas, just imagine what you will feel when you hear of deaths on either side. There is no question that both parties will survive the war. The kings you see here and the kings at Virata will slay each other mercilessly, influenced by anger. O Emperor, rescue them from death. Save this world from disaster. Let the feelings of affection you once bore for the Pandavas again flood your heart. Bring them here as your children. According to worldly virtue, such fatherless boys deserve your protection, especially in their distress. Now hear their message to you, which they asked me to repeat in the assembly. Krishna repeated what Yudhisthira had said just before Krishna's departure. At your command, O king, we have spent 13 years in exile, expecting that you would keep your word. As we have carefully kept our pledge, so we ask you to keep yours. We have suffered greatly, and now desire to return to our kingdom. O Bharata, you know the principles of virtue. Act toward us as a father should act toward his sons. We will act as your sons. You are our worshipable elder. If you find us remiss in our duties, do not hesitate to correct us, O King. Set us on the proper course, and yourself follow the excellent path of virtue. Dhritarashtra shifted uncomfortably. His guilt at having mistreated Pandu's sons bothered him more than anything else. They had been brought to him as young children after their father, his brother, had died. It was true that he should treat them no differently than his own sons. This was surely his greatest sin, that he had neglected and even inflicted suffering on those deserving his protection. Tears fell from his blind eyes as Krishna continued. In an assembly where virtue is overcome by vice, it is the duty of the members of that assembly to remove it by all means. If vice is not removed, then it will kill all those who have participated in it. If vice prevails over virtue, falsehood over truth, then those who allow it will be ruined. What else could you do but return the Pandavas' kingdom? I desire both your good and what is best for the Pandavas. If my words are true, then let the Kurus confirm them and release the Kshatriya race from the shackles of death. Make the large-souled, virtuous Yudhisthira your ally. Do not destroy these kings for the sake of vice, nor morality for the sake of so-called happiness. Do not mistake good for evil, and evil for good. O Lord of the earth, restrain your sons, who are too attached to avarice. Kunti's sons are ready to serve you and to fight for you. This is my advice. Choose now that course which appears best to you, O King. Everyone remained silent. Having listened carefully to Krishna, the kings were speechless. No one could argue with anything he said. Only Duryodhan found fault with him, and he looked at Krishna with a sly smile. Parasaram was among the rishis, and when Krishna finished speaking, he stood to address the assembly. All eyes rested upon him as his voice rang out around the hall. He wore a black deerskin and had matted hair. His dark eyes glowed, and his body shone with a mystical luminosity. He told the assembly a story about the ancient king Dambodbhava. That king had possessed incomparable power, but had become excessively proud and arrogant. He searched continuously for opponents to defeat in battle. One day, he heard that the two rishis, Nara and Narayan, were the most powerful men on earth. He went at once to Gandamandana, where they were practicing asceticism, and challenged them. Although they declined, the king insisted. Finally, Nara said, "Fight then if you must, O Kshatriya. Bring your entire army and all your weapons. I will soon destroy your thirst for war." The king attacked the rishi with all his power. Nara pulled up a handful of grass, and imbuing it with mystic power, hurled it at the king and his army. The grass transformed into razor-sharp steel shafts that sliced off the ears and noses of all the soldiers. So many shafts rained down on them that they were unable to move. Dambodbhava fell at Nara's feet and begged for mercy. The Rishi forgave him his insolence and instructed him to never again insult someone without first establishing his opponent's power. Parsaram looked around the assembly. Nara's feat was wonderful. Narayan is capable of still greater deeds. Those two high-souled rishis are now present, as Arjuna and Krishna. Do not, like the vain Dambodbhava, try to face them in battle. Men suffer from 8 vices that steal their life duration: desire, anger, greed, vanity, insolence, pride, malice, and selfishness. Influenced by these evils, men are bewildered and act like fools. O heroes, do not fall victim to these vices and lose your lives. No one can defeat Arjuna within the 3 worlds, and Janardhan exceeds him. Make peace with them and do what is good for yourselves and the whole world. Then another rishi, Kanwa, spoke. Confirming what Parasaram had said about Nara and Narayan, he added, "One should not consider he who possesses great physical strength powerful. Real strength lies in virtue. The Pandavas are virtuous. Furthermore, Krishna, the reservoir of all virtue, is on their side. Those 5 heroes, combined with Krishna, are no less than Dharma, Vayu, Indra, and the 20 Ashvini gods, united with Vishnu. O Duryodhan, how will you even look at them? Effect peace at once, or be annihilated." Duryodhan was breathing heavy, his brow contracted. He gazed at Karna and laughed aloud when Kanwa stopped speaking. Slapping his thigh, he said defiantly, "I am whatever God has made me. It is he who created me and he who decides my fate. I will do exactly as he has determined and nothing else. What use is this discussion?" The prince had little faith in any supreme power, and his voice dripped with sarcasm. He looked at Karna and both of them smiled. They were not interested in the rishi's words. Then Narad spoke. Like Parasaram, he narrated an ancient history about a king who had suffered as a result of his own obstinacy and ignorance. In conclusion, he said, "O ruler of the earth, listen to your well-wisher's advice. Obstinacy leads to ruin. Abandon your anger and vanity and make peace with the Pandavas. Reflect carefully on this story I have just told, which is full of profound instructions and is approved by learned men. By understanding these instructions and by curbing anger and desire, a man may attain sovereignty over the world. By acting otherwise, one achieves only destruction." Duryodhan had said nothing. Dhritarashtra lifted his hand and replied, "O Narad, what you have said is true. I too wish for peace, but I am not the master in this case." Dhritarashtra turned toward Krishna, who sat easily on his throne, one foot on the seat and the other resting on the cushion at his feet. "O Keshava, I accept what you have said as the truth. What you have said is for our benefit and the benefit of the world. By following your words, we can attain heaven. But I am not my own master. O best of men, try to persuade my wicked son Duryodhan, who disregards all scriptural injunctions and never does what pleases me. He will not listen to me, and neither will he hear from Vidura, Bhishma, or any of his elders. Please instruct him yourself, O Krishna. If you can correct my son of crooked intellect and sinful heart, then you will have performed your duty as a friend." Krishna turned toward Duryodhan. "I will speak only for your good, O best of the Bharatas. I desire your prosperity and happiness as much as you do. What you are contemplating will make you suffer. Wise men in this world act only for virtue and profit. Thus they fulfill their desires. What you are proposing will not fulfill your desires. Your obstinacy is vicious, frightful, and destructive. It will hurt you, and there is no reason for it. Give it up. Pursue instead a course that will benefit you, your brothers, your followers, your friends. O chastiser of foes, make peace with your cousins. This will please your father and all the Kuru elders. Your father has commanded you to seek peace. A good man never neglects his father's order, nor does he ignore the advice of friends who know what is good. One who disregards the orders of seniors and the advice of well-wishers will be consumed as one who eats poisonous fruit dies. He never achieves his goal and is ultimately left sunk in remorse. Krishna paused. He looked steadily at Duryodhan, who remained silent. The prince looked downward and rubbed the floor with his sandal foot. All eyes in the hall were on him. Krishna continued to speak in measured tones. He who prefers the advice of inferior men to that of learned elders meets dangers. Nothing can rescue him. Who but you would abandon kinsmen who are equal in battle to Indra in favor of incompetent and dishonest strangers? Peace with the Pandavas is more in your interests than union with wicked men. Even though you treated them with deceit and harshness since they were born, they are prepared to forgive everything and live with you as friends. O best of the Bharatas, do not show anger towards your own relatives. Live for virtue and not only for pleasure. Only then will you be able to achieve what you desire. Living in peace with the Pandavas, all your aims will be achieved and your fame will spread far and wide. How can you prefer the shelter of Karna, Shakuni, and Dushasan to that of your noble cousins? Karna felt insulted by Krishna's words. He glanced at Duryodhan, who kept his head lowered. Both men were finding Krishna's speech hard to stomach. Both were convinced that their cause was no less righteous than that of the Pandavas. How was Dhritarashtra's claim to the throne any less than Pandu's, his younger brother? Duryodhan's right to the kingdom was at least equal to, if not greater than, the Pandavas' claim. They would not be able to live together in peace, that was clear. Then why should Duryodhan be the one to make concessions? The Pandavas left Hastinapur long ago. Things were going on well enough without them. It seems that Krishna favored them, perhaps because they were close friends. How could he say that he had Duryodhan's interest at heart? Karna turned his angry eyes toward Krishna, who, seeing both his and Duryodhan's defiance, said, O hero, show me the man who is capable of standing against the enraged Bhimasen. Having first cajoled, then cited the benefits of peace, Krishna ended by explaining the likely results of a war with the Pandavas. He hoped to instill fear and dissension among the Kurus. Again, who can go into battle against Arjuna and return home alive? Why do you seek war? What benefit do you see in slaughtering all these men? At Khandava, Arjuna vanquished the gods and the Gandharvas, Asuras and Nagas. What chance do you have? Will it be any different from what you experienced when you came to attack the Matsya kingdom? Look at your kinsmen and friends. Don't let them be killed for your own stupidity. Let not the prosperous Kuru race be destroyed for your sake. Bring the Pandavas here in peace. They will surely install your father as the emperor and you as his viceroy. That is your only chance to achieve lasting prosperity and happiness. Don't ignore it. After making peace with the Pandavas, you will attain a blessed state. Duryodhan showed no sign of agreeing with Krishna's words. He sat as if on fire, resembling a heap of hot coals. Seeing the prince unmoved, Bhishma said, Krishna's words are those of a friend, dear son. Follow his advice and do not be vindictive. If you ignore what Krishna is saying, you will achieve neither prosperity nor happiness. He has told you what will lead to virtue and profit. Any other course will result in ruin. O King, do not destroy the Kuru's prosperity. Do not cause the death of all these Kshatriyas. Do not destroy your brothers. Do not destroy yourself. Do not drown your parents in a sea of grief. Accept Keshava's advice. When Bhishma was finished, Drona stood. I too accept what Krishna has advised. His advice is pregnant with virtue and will profit all of us. Duryodhan, follow that advice. Do not insult Madhava with your perverted understanding. Those who now encourage you to fight will do little when the time comes. Rather, like you, they will have to depend on others. Know from me that none of us are capable of withstanding Arjuna and Krishna in battle. If you reject my words, you will be left to grieve before long. You have heard all of this again and again. What point is there in repeating it? Do as you wish. I did not wish to address you any more. The Kuru elders had lost patience with Duryodhan. It seemed that nothing could make him see sense. That all these Kshatriyas were soon to die seemed inevitable. There could be no outcome other than what Krishna and so many others had described. After Drona, Vidura spoke. He knew Duryodhan would not hear him, but he wanted to show his solidarity with Krishna's speech, as Krishna had requested. I do not grieve for you, Duryodhan. Rather, I grieve for your old parents. With only you to protect them, they will soon wander about without anyone. All of their friends and ministers will be slain, like birds shorn of their wings. Because they begot such a vicious son, they are destined to become beggars in this world. Having heard his three chief ministers concurring with Krishna, Dhritarashtra leaned forward on his throne. The time has come to make peace, Duryodhan. The great soul Keshava has spoken the truth for our benefit and ultimate salvation. With his help, we can attain our goals. Go with him in peace to Varata and arrange to bring the Pandavas here. Let the hostilities cease. Let the virtuous Yudhisthira place his red-palmed hand on your back with affection. Let the broad-shouldered Vrikodara embrace you with goodwill. Let Arjuna and the twins offer you respects while you offer them blessings. You and they may enjoy sovereignty over the world together. I think that time has arrived, dear son. Do not disobey me. Choose peace, for you cannot be victorious in battle. Duryodhan was furious. Why was everyone afraid of the Pandavas? Perhaps he had been unfortunate when he had encountered them in the past, but that would soon change. Now, aided by the Danava's mystic power and the combined might of the Kuru heroes, he was invincible. The prince looked at his father. How could the old man order him in this way? Accept Bhima's embrace? Bhima was his mortal foe. Duryodhan shuddered at the thought. And having ruled over the entire earth, how could he be expected to now offer his respects to Yudhisthira? Duryodhan felt it was time he spoke his mind. Calming himself, he rose from his seat and looked at Krishna. Although you speak out of concern for me, O Madhusudan, you nevertheless criticize me alone. Why, O Keshava, do you praise the Pandavas and accuse me without properly understanding the situation? You, Vidura, Bhishma, Drona, and my father have all found fault with me, but not with any other. Yet in this matter I do not find that I have acted in any way unworthy. I have not committed the slightest fault. Even after much introspection I see nothing wrong. The Pandavas lost their kingdom at dice. They were not forced to play that game. Even when their wealth was returned, they agreed to play a final game and thus were exiled. What was my fault? Why do they regard me as an enemy? Even now, although they are weak and incapable, they threaten the Kurus. Duryodhan looked at Karna, who clenched his fist in support. The core of a prince continued, We are powerful Kshatriyas and will not bow down to any man out of fear. I do not see anyone who can face the Kuru army in battle, O Keshava. Why should I give anything to the Pandavas under threat of war? Rather, it is my duty to fight. If I lay down my body in battle, then I will achieve a glorious destination in my next life. What Kshatriya born in a noble family would avoid battle out of fear of the enemy? No self-respecting ruler would bow to one who threatened him with harsh words. I am not afraid of the Pandavas. O Madhava, I will never give them any part of this kingdom. It now belongs to Dhritarashtra, and so it will remain. We are simply his servants. Although he once gave away that which should not have been given, we have rectified this error. When I was a child and depended on others, the Pandavas were mistakenly given the kingdom. We will not make the same mistake again. Duryodhan paused and glanced at his audience. He rested one hand on his hip and the other on his sword hilt. He concluded, O Keshava, this is my reply. As long as I rule this kingdom on my father's behalf, I will not give the Pandavas even that much land which can be pierced by the point of a needle. Duryodhan sat down, his eyes fixed on Krishna. Karna lifted his huge arm, smeared with red sandalwood paste, and placed it over Duryodhan's shoulders. Vidura looked at the two men and shook his head sadly. Dhritarashtra was the only one who could prevent the impending calamity, but the old monarch remained silent, hearing everything, seeing nothing. If the king desired peace, as he said he did, he would have to restrain his son forcibly. Duryodhan was not going to listen to him unless he was prepared to back his words with action. He would have to have the prince arrested, otherwise his words were empty. Reflecting for a moment, Krishna said, You obviously desire the endless sleep of the hero, and so you shall have it. Wait just a little longer. Then there will be the massacre you desire. O fool, you think you have no blame, but everyone here knows the truth. You were jealous of the Pandava's prosperity. You plotted with Shakuni to defeat Yudhisthira at dice. Who else could have treated his brother's wife as you treated Draupadi? Draupadi is chaste, of noble birth, and well-behaved. She is dearer to the Pandavas than their own lives. Still, you insulted her before all the Kurus. Krishna reminded Duryodhan how Dushasan had addressed the Pandavas as they left Hastinapur, and how even before the dice game, the Kurus had antagonized them. To plead innocence was simply evidence of his arrogance. Krishna was stern as he continued. If you do not return their kingdom to them willingly, you will have to return it to them when they defeat you in battle. You have committed so many evil deeds toward the Pandavas, and now you try to appear innocent. You have been repeatedly ordered by your elders to make peace, but you ignore them. Only by peace will everyone be benefited, including yourself. That it appears otherwise to you is a sign of your lack of intelligence. Krishna's speech had convinced even some of Duryodhan's brothers. Dushasan in particular had begun to favor peace. Remembering Bhima's vow to tear out his heart, he addressed his elder brother. If you are so foolish that you will not willingly make peace, then the Kauravas will bind you hand and foot and offer you to Yudhisthira. Duryodhan stormed out of the hall. Then Duryodhan's 100 brothers and all of his ministers followed him. After they had gone, Bhishma said, One who abandons virtue and profit out of wrath will soon be sunk in a sea of trouble. This prince lacks wisdom and knowledge. He is influenced only by anger and greed. O Janardhan, I think the Kshatriya race is about to be annihilated, for his brothers and ministers follow him out of folly. Krishna turned his lotus-like eyes toward Dhritarashtra. This is the fault of all the Kuru leaders. You should have restrained Duryodhan by force. O sinless men, it is time for you to act. Listen as I describe what is in your best interests. You all know how Kamsa, king of the Bhojas, and Ugrasena's wicked son, was rejected by his kinsmen. In the end, I killed him. By this one act, the Yadavas, Andakas, and Vrishnis all became happy. One man should be sacrificed for the sake of a race, the race for the good of a town, the town for the benefit of the country, and the earth for the sake of the soul. O Bharatas, after binding Duryodhan, Karna, Shakuni, and Dushashan, make peace with the Pandavas. In this way the Kshatriyas may be saved. This made Dhritarashtra even more uncomfortable. From Duryodhan's birth, his advisers had insisted he reject his son. He had refused. Now he was tasting the bitter fruit of his mistaken judgment. He too was attached to his son, and that attachment had not weakened over the years. Duryodhan took advantage of his weakness and ignored him. It seemed Duryodhan could only be checked if he were executed, or at least imprisoned. Now Krishna was suggesting that they carry this through. How could he contemplate such an option? He thought of Gandhari. Maybe the prince would listen to his mother. He decided to ask her to enter the assembly. O Vidura, please go and bring the queen here. Then order my son to return to the assembly. Perhaps the wise Gandhari will be able to persuade him. Vidura left the hall, and soon Gandhari entered, maidservants leading the blindfolded queen to her place next to the king. After being seated and informed of the situation, she addressed Dhritarashtra. Your son is full of lust and greed. Only by your blessings has he obtained this kingdom, which he in no way deserves. O king, although you know he is sinful, you support him out of fondness. For this you are as much to blame for the present situation as he is. It will be difficult now to check Duryodhan. As Gandhari finished, Duryodhan returned, strode angrily across the hall, bowed slightly to his parents, and sat down. He was still breathing heavily, his eyes red. Gandhari spoke gently. My dear son, listen as I offer advice meant only for your benefit. It is my most earnest wish that you make peace with the Pandavas. Follow your elders' guidance, my son, and reap the fruits of virtue. You want to control the earth only because you are full of sense desire and anger. You do not know that only by overcoming those two impulses can a man attain success in life. One who is controlled by his senses cannot control a kingdom. Only after conquering ourselves can we conquer the earth. Otherwise, it is not possible. The uncontrolled senses are powerful enough to kill a man, just as an untrained horse can kill an incompetent driver. Prosperity always attends the king who has mastered his passions and who stands ready to chastise offenders, acting only after careful consideration. He who gives in to desire and wrath will lose everything in the end. Such a man cannot even attain heaven. Therefore strive to control your senses, for in this lies your greatest good. Gandhari spoke from her own realization. Since the Pandavas' exile, she had begun to practice asceticism. Feeling guilty for the way the Kurus had insulted Draupadi, she fasted and performed constant sacrifices. She practiced penance, praying that her licentious son might somehow be brought to his senses. But that seemed impossible. His heart was steeped in greed and envy, but he could not recognize those qualities in himself. Imploring, the queen continued, By joining with the virtuous and self-controlled Pandavas, you can enjoy this earth for a long time. What will you gain by fighting with them? Here is Krishna, who performs powerful acts with little exertion. He is able to destroy all the kings alone. What then will happen when he unites with Arjuna? You have heard this advice again and again. One who ignores his well-wishers will only lament, but his enemies will rejoice. O child, your father gave the Pandavas their due share, afraid of a dispute. Now you are enjoying the fruits of that gift. It was those heroes who subjugated the world. Surely half the kingdom can satisfy your needs. Do not invite destruction by igniting a dispute with the Pandavas. They have suffered enough these last 13 years. Give them back what is theirs, and save the world from disaster. When Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, Bhimasena, Dhananjaya, and Drishtadyumna come together in anger, all creatures will be destroyed. Therefore quench your greed and act with wisdom. This is my advice to you, dear child. Duryodhan snorted. He had heard it all before. Everyone praised the Pandavas and criticized him. There didn't seem to be anything he could say to convince them otherwise. Seeing that his mother had finished, he again left the hall. It was time to act. He went straight to Dushasan's palace. His brother was sitting with Karna and Shakuni. Slapping his thigh in anger, he said to them, "It seems that Krishna is swaying everyone's mind toward the Pandavas. He is urging the king to have us arrested. I am worrying about this. Krishna is very persuasive." Duryodhan looked at Dushasan. "Krishna even turned your mind in the hall." Dushasan looked ashamed as his elder brother went on. "We must quickly execute our plan to capture Krishna. Even as Vishnu seized Bali, we will grab Krishna and bind him. When the Pandavas hear of his capture, they will lose both heart and energy for the fight, just like serpents whose fangs are broken. Let us do it swiftly before the old man gives everything away again." Dushasan and Shakuni agreed, but Karna was uncertain. "I did not believe we would be able to capture Keshava, O king. If you wish to try, I will do what I can to help, but I doubt we can overcome him." Unlike Duryodhan, Karna felt no anger towards Krishna, whom he respected as a great warrior. Krishna had killed many powerful fighters. According to the rishis, he was an incarnation of the original Supreme Person. Karna thought it likely. He only joined the plot to capture Krishna out of friendship for Duryodhan, but he had little faith that it would succeed. Duryodhan laughed away his friend's doubts. "Krishna will be unprepared for our move. He has come without weapons and not expecting to fight. We can catch him off guard and have him bound and taken away before he even realizes what is happening." The prince had no doubts about his plan. Perhaps it may fail, but there was nothing to lose. He had already declared open hostility against the Pandavas. The fight may as well start immediately, and if Krishna could be captured, then the odds would shift dramatically in his favor. With the still uncertain Karna, he left to make arrangements. In the hall, Satyaki had watched Duryodhan closely. He noted that as the prince left, certain key Kuru leaders had also departed. It was obvious that Duryodhan was about to try something. Satyaki knew that he had already stated his intention to capture Krishna. It seemed he was about to try. Leaning across to Krishna, Satyaki whispered, "I think Duryodhan will now try to seize you. He has taken a contingent of warriors out of the hall with him. I am sure he will try to take your life. O Keshava, this wicked man has lost all sense of propriety." Krishna smiled and reassured Satyaki, "Do not fear, my friend. All the kings on earth together could not capture me. Speak to Dhritarashtra and see what he decides should be done." Satyaki addressed the old king. "It seems your foolish son intends to make good his threat to capture Madhava. O leader of men, he and his evil counselors, overpowered by desire and anger, seek to do something exceedingly mean. Yet they cannot possibly succeed any more than children can take hold of blazing fire." Vidura had also noted Duryodhan's intentions. Rising from his seat, he said, "O king, your son's time has come. They are preparing to do something which cannot be done. Even so, it is sinful beyond all limits to even contemplate it. Standing against Krishna, they will die like worms falling into a fire. He will send them all to Yamaraja's abode as a lion destroys a flock of sheep. Krishna laughed. Let them try. Maybe this is how this problem will be solved. But do not worry. I will not do anything for which I can be censured. Although I could slay them all outright, I will not do so. In any event, they have already been killed by their own sinful desires. By coveting Yudhisthira's wealth, they have weakened themselves and will soon be ruined. O king, let Duryodhan do as he likes. When Krishna stopped speaking, Dhritarashtra's voice boomed through the court. Bring my wicked son here at once, and bring his ministers with him. I will again try to bring him to the path of righteousness. Once again Duryodhan was brought back into the hall. He entered with Karna and Dushasan just behind him. Again he strode across the hall and took his place. Dhritarashtra was angry. O you of inhuman conduct and extreme sinfulness, having as your support only men of small deeds, you want to perpetrate an act which is too difficult to accomplish and which is heinous beyond limit. Like a child wanting to hold the moon, you desire to capture the lotus-eyed Krishna. All virtuous men would condemn you. Anyway, it is not possible for you to carry this through. Even the gods could not take Keshava prisoner. O fool, give up your absurd notions and come to your senses immediately. Duryodhan was seething with anger. He said nothing. He had already ordered his men to come into the hall as soon as Krishna rose to leave. Everyone else may be afraid of the Yadava, but he was not. The prince glanced across at Krishna, who sat smiling and at ease. Soon everyone would see just how strong he was. Vidura, clearly remembering how the Kurus had violated Draupadi, could not stand the thought of Krishna receiving similar treatment in the same hall. He spoke again, trying one last time to influence Duryodhan. O Bharata, listen as I remind you once more of the many demons who have tried and failed to overpower Krishna. The hugely powerful Naraka, who was the son of the earth goddess herself, lived for thousands of years surrounded by his vast forces. Krishna killed him easily. He also destroyed the five-headed Mora, who struck fear into the hearts of the gods. When he was a child, he killed Putana and the evil wizards Arishta and Dainuka. When he was 7 years old, he lifted Govardhan Hill aloft with one hand. Vidura named various other asuras and kings whom Krishna had defeated. Finally, he said, Krishna is the doer of everything. He is the cause of all causes. From him comes all power and opulence. He can do anything without the least effort. O Duryodhan, you do not understand Govinda. His prowess is incomparable, and it will reduce you and your followers to ashes. Attempting to take him prisoner is ludicrous. Krishna looked at Duryodhan. O Kaurava, out of folly you think me to be alone and vulnerable. O one of small intellect, see now as I show you the truth. Here are all the Pandavas, the Vrishnis, and the Andakas. Here too are the gods, Adityas, Rudras, Vasus, and the great Rishis. Duryodhan could take no more. He jumped up and pointed at Krishna. Seize him now! At once his soldiers began running into the hall from all its entrances. With swords and bows at the ready, they closed on Krishna. Krishna laughed as he did. His bodily suddenly flashed like lightning. He began to grow in size, and various gods issued from him. Brahma sprang from his forehead, Shiva from his chest. The Lokapala sat on his arms, and Agni appeared from his mouth. Then Indra and the Maruts appeared, along with the host of Gandharvas, Yakshas, and Rakshasas. From his two eyes came Balaram and Arjuna, who stood on his left and right sides. Behind him stood Yudhisthira, Bhima, and the twins, and behind them were the Vrishnis and Andakas, headed by Pradyumna. Krishna's mace, discus, and club weapons appeared, brazing brilliantly. His pores emanated lights, sparks, and clouds of smoke. The sight was too frightening. Almost everyone in the assembly closed their eyes. Only Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, and Sanjaya, were able to look upon Krishna as he manifested his universal form. The rishis also gazed upon him, folding their palms and offering prayers. The sky resounded with celestial drums, and flowers showered from the heavens into the hall. Sanjaya described the event to Dhritarashtra, who said, "O Krishna, you are ever doing good for the world. Therefore it is right that you should bless me with the eyes to see your form. O best of the Yadavas, please remove my blindness." "O Kuru leader, it is not necessary for me to remove your blindness. If I simply say, 'See me,' you will see me," Krishna replied, and immediately Dhritarashtra could see him standing within the great hall. He also saw numerous gods approaching Krishna and worshipping him with Vedic mantras. Outside the hall, a fierce wind blew. Huge waves moved over the ocean, and thunderclaps reverberated in the sky. The earth trembled. The hall was in a tumult. Krishna withdrew his mystical form and again assumed a two-armed form. Taking permission from the rishis, he left the hall, holding the hands of Satyaki and Kritavarma. The rishis, headed by Narada, rose from their seats and vanished, their minds astonished. Dhritarashtra again became blind, and he sat in silent amazement. As Krishna left, the Kurus followed him with folded hands, like the gods following Indra. Only Duryodhan and his ministers remained seated. They were struck with wonder and unable to do or say anything. Their plan to capture Krishna was obviously futile. Outside the hall, all the natural disturbances had stopped, and a gentle breeze was blowing. Krishna mounted his chariot and prepared to leave. As he sat upon his golden car, spread with white tiger skins, Dhritarashtra came out of the hall. Led by Vidura, he went up to Krishna and said, "You have seen the influence I wield over my sons, O Janardhan. You have seen everything. Nothing has been hidden from you. It is not proper to blame me, O Keshava, for I desire only peace. I have no wicked intentions against the Pandavas. You have heard me speak to Duryodhan and seen his response. I have done my best." Dhritarashtra was surrounded by the Kuru elders. Krishna looked at all of them and said, "You have also witnessed everything, how that uncultured man walked out, even as he was receiving instructions meant for his good. You have also heard the ruler of the earth state that he is powerless. With your permission, I will now return to Yudhisthira." Krishna sat down with Satyaki and Kritavarma on either side of him. Dharaka urged on the horses, and the chariot moved off. The Kurus watched it move along the broad highway, cheered on all sides by crowds of citizens. Krishna ordered Dharaka to take him back to Vidura's house. He wanted to speak once more to Kunti before he left for Virata. Going before his aunt with Satyaki, Krishna touched her feet and told her what had transpired in the assembly. Kunti was not surprised. She had not expected Duryodhan to listen. Fearing that Yudhisthira might be too forgiving, she asked Krishna to exhort him to fight. She knew he would be loath to fight with his kinsmen and elders only to win a kingdom. As a Kshatriya princess, Kunti had been educated in the rules of conduct for warriors. She spoke for some time with Krishna, citing the rules and making it clear that the proper course for Yudhisthira was war. Her son should harbor no doubt about it. Again reminding Krishna of the prophetic voices which had foretold great things for her sons at their births, Kunti said, "Let it be as the divine oracles predicted. O Krishna, my sons must now fulfill their destiny and take control of this earth. They will not achieve it through peaceful means. Nor can Draupadi's honor be restored unless my sons fight. For me, this is the most compelling reason for war. They must avenge their wife. They have not freed themselves of that obligation. They failed to protect her in the vicious assembly at the dice game. They must now rectify this wrong." Kunti bowed down and touched Krishna's feet with her hands. Standing again, she concluded, "O Keshava, tell my sons that I am well. Go now on your auspicious way. Krishna stood up to leave. After walking respectfully around his aunt, he bid her farewell and left the room. Outside, he found Bhishma and the other Kuru leaders waiting to see him off. Krishna bowed before them, exchanged farewells, and mounted his chariot with Satyaki. He then headed out of Hastinapur. The Kurus watched as the chariot sped toward the city's southern gate. Urged on by Dwarika, Krishna's horses seemed to leap into the sky again and again. In a short time, he was out of sight. The Kuru chiefs turned and headed toward the king's palace. Krishna's peace mission had failed. War was certain.